From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host all over the Great Lakes State. WildMichiganRadio.com is our website. You can pick up the Carnivore Club podcasts from our website as well, WildMichiganRadio.com. Carnivore Club sponsoring the podcast for us, and you can go to a direct link to Carnivore Club. Kind of a meat of the month club. This is really cool. Check them out. And we just had Tim Wright on our show here a few minutes ago, talking about Carnivore Club, what they have coming up for 2015, the remainder of, as far as the meats that will be coming to your door. And some really, really cool stuff. Go to our website, check them out. And when you order, make sure to use the promo code WILDMICHIGAN for 15% off. And trust me, this will save you some money, and you probably won't regret it because it's really cool. So we're going to get underway right now in the second hour of the show. While perusing Facebook, some friends of mine over in Ireland, of course, we were there earlier this year fishing Loch Derg for brown trout and for pike with the guys at Black Bay Lodge with Nicola and some of the other guys over there. And I get this Facebook request from somebody in Spain. Okay, you fish. We're on the same page. Let's look at it. And as I was looking through some of the things on their page, I noticed some custom lures that really stuck out. By a gentleman by the name of Tom Stinson. So I look into it, come to find out Tom Stinson is over on the west side of the state, over in the Rockford area by Grand Rapids, where our station, WJRW, carries Wild Michigan. And lo and behold, we have him on the show here now. Tom, welcome to Wild Michigan, sir.
Well, thanks for having me.
Not at all. Not at all. And it was kind of funny that, so I have to go through a friend from Italy that lives in Ireland, get a friend request from a friend of his from Spain to find a guy in Michigan to talk about custom lures.
That is so crazy how that works. I mean, Facebook and the internet has just shrunk this world down to like just nothing. It is tiny now.
It is. But this happens in a very cool way because I was looking at some of the custom lures, and really, some of the colors I've never seen before, and some of the things that you produce, and what really shocked me, as I was looking at one of them, which I think is on your Facebook page right now, and it's almost like a peacock bass color.
Yeah, that is probably one of my most popular patterns I've been doing over the last couple of years. I started out doing that just out of fun. You know, a lot of my patterns that I come up with are just like, you know, harebrained ideas I had, and I thought, you know, this will look kind of cool. And I painted one, and lo and behold, the thing is with Facebook is when you post a picture up, I was just, you know, going to throw it up there just for fun, and all of a sudden everybody starts jumping all over it, you know, asking me to, you know, keep painting those, make more of them, paint them on some of their lures, and it just kind of took off. But, it was just kind of a fun thing I started with, but I think what it is people love those colors, you know, not so much the pattern. I mean, obviously there's no peacock bass swimming around in our waters around here. But the muskies and the pike don't care. They like those colors. They like contrast, and they've been eating them.
Well, you know, we have that fire tiger pattern that is so popular with so many different lures, with Rapala and other people and Northland Tackle. You know, they use that fire tiger colors, very similar, but the pattern is really cool because it's got some horizontal lines along with some vertical lines for contrast.
Yeah. One of the most important things when you're making lures is profile. Action, and then when we break it down into the minutia, you know, like the colors and the contrast and the patterns, in my opinion, contrast is huge, you know. I think fish key in on contrast, you know, whether it's spots or bars or it just makes it stand out in the water. And I think that's why some of these patterns like fire tiger and perch and peacock bass are so effective is because they have great contrast. You have lights and darks and different shades and it just makes them stand out.
you know, as much as I want to say that a more realistic looking fishing lure, it probably catches us more than it does a fish, I think. You know, because look, it's like camo. I always look at camo like this. If it's appealing to me, boy, that must work. But like you said, there are some contrasts and some colors that really trigger a fish and triggers their willingness to bite.
Yes. Some of my more less appealing colors to the fishermen are some of the ones that catch the most fish. You know, like some of my least popular baits sometimes are my, you know, best producing patterns. You're absolutely right. I mean, sometimes, you know, we're painting things and you know, first you have to sell the lures first, right? If they're not in the water, they're not going to catch fish.
Sure.
So, you know, you got to get past the fishermen first. So we kind of cater, you know, speaking on, you know, custom lure painters, you know, and the specialty guys, you know, you have to catch the fishermen's attention first and foremost, and it has to catch fish, you know, because otherwise they're not going to come back. But you're right. Some of the more natural patterns, I think sometimes they just get lost in the wash down there. You know, if they look exactly like everything else down there, there's no reason for them to be singled out and focused on.
No, I agree. And sometimes if something has been thrown so much that there has to be, with the same action and the same color, there has to be something that triggers in a fish's mind saying, you know, that didn't taste good the last time and I got away from it. So I may not. I know they have a very short memory, but instinct would have to tell them that something wasn't right with the last time that came through.
I believe that to be very true, especially with muskies. You know, because catch and release is so big with muskie fishing. You know, some of these fish are 20 years old, and they're seeing baits every day, every season. They have to. I have to believe they're being conditioned to not hit certain things after a while. You know, I totally agree.
Speaking with Tom Stinson, Tom Stinson Custom Lures out of Rockford, Michigan, here, a Facebook find, if you will. When you said something that kind of clicked into my brain, Tom, that you have people that want you to paint their lures. So is this something that you can paint over? Is there a conditioning process to painting prior to doing this work?
What I've done in the past, like the way I got my start, was people would send me old, you know, worn-out baits or baits that have never caught fish before, baits that, you know, needed a new clear coat, they were, you know, soaking up water or whatever, you know, just baits that need to be repaired. And what I would do is I would strip them down, repaint them in whatever color they were asking for, and ship them back to them. It's pretty simple. There's a lot of guys out there that are doing it. It's nothing new. I'm just one of the few guys that deals with it. That are doing it, but yeah, you can send. Basically we just sand them down, prime them. We got to find the right primer that sticks to, you know, whatever surface, substrate, you know, whether it's a plastic or wood bait, and make sure it's sealed, primed, and then we just put on a new finish, and it's like a new bait again.
Interesting stuff, Tom. I mentioned in the first hour of the program that for years my life has been buying and selling a lot of antique advertising or antique stuff in general. I just love old stuff. And one time on eBay, I had come across a bunch of old antique lures, and somebody had said something that there was an alger lure in there. Well, I didn't know anything about alger lures. I didn't know anything about antique lures, but I bought the lot for like $13. Come to find out that alger lure was a Michigan-produced lure and extremely rare. And some of the techniques that I saw were really kind of unique. And I'm going to have to ask you this question in the next segment. So hang on. We're going to speak more with Tom Stinson next. Rockford, Tom Stinson, Custom Lures. We're talking about fishing lures here on Wild Michigan.
This is Mark Zona from Zona's Awesome Fishing Show, and you're listening to my guy, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
I'm on a first name basis at the tackle shop. I got a charge account running up nonstop. They ought to give me my own parking spot. I can't fit another plug in my tackle box.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State. WildMichiganRadio.com is our website. You can pick up our links to places like Lucky Buck, Costa Sunglasses, see what's out there. Great shades and great for hunting as well, man. Just don't be shy when it comes to looking for a good pair of eyewear. Go to WildMichiganRadio.com, click on the link to CostaDelMar.com. Now, we're speaking with Tom Stinson from Tom Stinson Custom Lures. And Tom, I left you hanging in that last comment. I apologize. But I had picked up on this Alger lure, which turned out to be something super rare in the world of fishing lures, because after I sold it, it went, I went out back on eBay, put it back there, sold for a ton of money. But what I noticed on there was a scaling, a painted scale, but it was so fine for turn of the century. I wasn't really sure how it was done. In my mind, all I could think of was he stretched a nylon over and painted. And maybe airbrushed something. I don't know. But it looked to me that type of scaling. But it was so fine and so detailed for that turn of the century time. It was very interesting. And I still don't know how they do it. And that's why I'm going to ask you.
Sure. Honestly, it hasn't changed much in that, that time frame. We're still doing it now pretty much the same way they were doing it then. There's a couple different ways you can do that. You can paint the pattern of, like, say we're going to paint a perch. So we're going to paint the yellows and the whites and, the black bars and then maybe the orange belly. And then, like, one of the last things we'll do is just add a scale effect, kind of similar to, like, what maybe a taxidermist would do. There's a few ways we can do that. We can either do it with some, like, metallic gold or metallic silver paint, and we can just apply it with, like, a sponge or a brush just to give some, glimmer along the top edge of the shoulder. The most popular way to do it is to take a net, like a cargo bag, the liner out of, like, say, a swimsuit, any kind of net mesh you can find that has the pattern that you're looking for, and we'll stretch that over the lure, clothespin it at the bottom, and then we'll very lightly spray it with a metallic gold paint or metallic silver, whichever color, scales you want. And then the trick with that is getting it on there just, it's a transparent paint, so you want to get on there real thin so you can still see colors from underneath, but yet you're going to have this scale pattern over the top. Like when you remove the net, obviously there's no paint where the net was, so it gives that the scale effect that you're talking about. The second way I've done it in the past is for like a super fine scale look. I'll paint the lure like a dark color, and then I will put a super, actually it's an onion bag, you get at the supermarket. Mm-hmm. Cut that up into the shape of the lure, stretch that over very tightly to the bait, and then I'll spray that over with an opaque white, and then finish the whole pattern with all the different colors, and then when I remove that netting, there's just this ultra fine black line that has the representation of scales. So that's basically the two ways I do it, and I think it's pretty common.
That's absolutely incredible. I mean, because look, a lot of people probably don't analyze things, but I analyze everything in life, I think. But and that's interesting. I appreciate you sharing that with us. Now, custom lures are it's a niche thing. A lot of us just go to the shelf. We go to the big stores and we buy them. But when you find something, especially the musky guys, I know they're very particular about their lures. Walleye guys are getting to be the same way, and you're using colors for walleye that, look, I've never seen a pink or purple fish in the water, a bait fish in the water, but those are hot colors.
Right. They are. And it's come to my attention in just the last few years. I was primarily just a musky bait painter, lure maker, and I've kind of gotten more into the walleye end of it in the last couple of years, and that's where I'm seeing it, because it's not me pushing it. It's what the fishermen are asking me for.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few walleye pros, tournament guys that I paint for, a few guides, and it's kind of fun when you're seeing certain trends from all over the country. Because these guys, I mean, look, my client base is from all over North America and in Canada as well. And so when I'm seeing these trends from totally, you know, vast different areas, you know, there's pinks and purples and, you know, there's certain, and it's not always pinks and purples, but whatever it may be. It's really neat to see, you know, a guy in Minnesota is using the same thing and catching fish as a guy, you know, in Ohio. But that has definitely, you know, seemed to be the trend lately, is some of these brighter colors. I don't know if it's more of, like we, you know, mentioned, that the fish becoming conditioned to certain patterns. You know, like the store-bought patterns, everybody has the store-bought patterns. So is it possibly the fish are just getting conditioned to those? Or is it a matter of, you know, the purples and pinks just show up better in the water column than, like, some of these natural patterns. So the only thing we'll ever, you know, the only way to know is ask the fish.
You know, you're not going to get much out of them.
Yeah.
Exactly. Tom Stinson, Custom Lures. We're talking with Tom Stinson right here now on Wild Michigan, of course, out of Rockford. I want to throw a couple of really quick questions at you. One, real quickly, I'm looking that you had auctioned a soft plastic bait, the skeleton perch with the bright eyes. That is just, you know, not only is it appealing and cool to look at, I'd be afraid to throw it in the water after I bought it.
Yeah, there are some times when I try to paint, like, collectible stuff, and that was, the intent with that one was I spent a little extra time on that. Put the bright eyes in there, which is, you know, an added feature that adds, you know, a little more time, a little more value. But yeah, some of the stuff we do ends up being, you know, somewhat collectible. The thing is, it looks so fishy. I hope he ends up fishing it because I think he's going to catch fish for him.
It's absolutely cool. Of course, you can find him on Facebook at Tom Stinson Custom Lures. And the other question I had for you is you have developed or you're using your own kind of eyelet driver that I thought was quite unique.
Yes. Another part of what I do is I make specialty tooling for other lure makers. Like they always say, necessity is the mother of invention. You know, when I got into building baits and putting lures together and stuff, I found a need that there's certain tools that weren't available to these guys, and, you know, everything was done by hand. And in my day job, you know, I'm a tool and die maker, so it was just natural for me to start coming up with some of these tools to help along with the manufacturing process, especially for the small guys. Mm-hmm. That's what I love to do, is I love helping these small batch lure makers. You know, they kind of call themselves basement bait makers. Which is kind of like a growing, you know, subcult of lure makers out there. You know, a lot of them are using Facebook and the internet to get exposure for themselves. But yeah, so that's another part of what I do is make specialty tooling.
Well, absolutely. I love this conversation, Tom. I look forward to talking to you again. You can go to our Facebook page, Wild Michigan on Facebook. We'll have we're going to put Tom Stinson up there so you can see it for yourself. Tom, thank you so much for joining us here. Find him on Facebook, Tom Stinson Custom Lures. A link on our Facebook, which is at our website, wildmichiganradio.com.
To everyone that has served this great country, keeping us free to enjoy the great outdoors, thank you. From Duran Martinez and Team Wild Michigan.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone, up and at 'em bright and early.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Man, what a fun show this has been this week. Absolutely love it, man. Thanks so much to Tom Stinson. Tom Stinson, Custom Lures out of Rockford. Amazing work. The things you can find on the internet, and I don't mean bad. I'm not talking about Kim Kardashian. I'm talking about quality outdoor products that we found from Ireland to Italy to Spain to here. We had to find somebody from Michigan on Facebook via those routes. But very happy to have them on. Thanks, everybody, from HHA Sports. Single pin archery sight technology, the absolute best. And that's why we use them here at Wild Michigan. Going to move things a little forward here. We have Dean Hall joining us, Michigan Sportsman Against Hunger. Dean, welcome back. Every year we have Michigan Sportsman Against Hunger on. This year is probably a little bit more important than normal because, look, the need for venison and quality meat for people who need it in the state is always there. But this time, we've run into a bit of a difficulty with CWD in the Clinton, Ingham, Shiawassee County area, of course, in Meridian Township. CWD has been confirmed in a few, in three whitetail in Michigan, and that is going to impact donations. How you doing, Dean? Good to have you along.
Well, very good, Duran. Thank you very much for calling on the show. It's pretty cool.
No, not at all. You know, we've had you, we've had Neil on the show before, and we want to talk about how CWD might impact donations this year. We know there was a large meat processor in Michigan that has said, you know what, we're going to step away from deer processing this year. And it has to be a difficult decision on two levels. One, the financial aspect of things. Two, the charitable aspect. And how is that going to affect you here in Michigan?
Well, and it's going to affect, especially in that specific area, it's probably going to have a deep effect. I can understand, excuse me, while that one processor had decided not to accept any deer from within DMU 333, the core CWD area. But based on, you know, his customers, he's probably more afraid of what his customers are going to perceive than most anything else. I mean, he's just being cautious, and any business person would probably do the same. But there are some people that they've looked at a lot of the stats, and they read a lot of the information that Department of Natural Resources has concerning chronic wasting disease, and they know that it's going to be, basically the deer are going to be sitting in cold storage, and nothing's really going to transmit from them like a radiation or get out of them and go across the floor to get into other deer. But one thing that's for sure, the deer are going to sit there in storage and they're going to be tested. And once they're tested, okay, basically they're going to be given the green light to go ahead and process.
Absolutely. And that's good. I mean, I have to applaud the DNR on so many things with how this is being handled, because the first time we had CWD found on a captive deer in a facility in Kent County, we had to shut down the whole Lower Peninsula because of how things were written in to baiting and supplemental feeding and the like. Now we just have a three-county area, which is Clinton, Ingham, Shiawassee County, and the core area of the nine townships that have mandatory testing. So we are still able to at least get deer processed after the deer has been tested. And donations to Sportsman Against Hunger is very important. And we're hitting on this early in the bow season this year. So maybe, you know, when somebody picks up the podcast here on Wild Michigan, that they're reminded to, you know, that if they have the extra venison to help donate it.
Yes, and that would be much appreciated. I mean, every single year there's people that donate annually, and thankfully, I mean, because of works that are done on calls at airports, parks, areas where you can't traditionally hunt, I mean, basically calls that are performed there, those deer go into a Michigan Sportsman Against Hunger program as well. I mean, it's a great thing, and one thing for sure, hunger in this state definitely is not going to turn its back and just walk on out. I mean, it affects everybody from inner city to rural areas, from the old to the young.
It does. Now, how was last year for you guys, for Sportsman Against Hunger? How many pounds did you guys get donated last year?
Well, it was over 28,000 pounds from the processors total. And because deer harvests were down last year, we expected to have a little bit of a decrease, which we did. But we're hoping that this year will come back up to an average of about 30,000 to 31,000.
Absolutely. We're speaking with Dean Hall from Michigan Sportsman Against Hunger. SportsmanAgainstHunger.org is their website, and there's a link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. You guys do collections every year. How have the collections of other foods? Because we know that venison, when you ground it up into burger, that, you know, it can be best used that way. But there are other types of food that you guys are picking up as well, right?
Oh, sure. Sure is. Thousands of pounds of canned foods, non-perishables. I mean, those help quite a bit. And the thing is that food banks, pantries, they get a pretty good share of non-perishables, which helps them a lot. But one of the things that's needed and they really cannot get is protein that comes from meat products. And venison being extremely high in protein, very low in fat content. I mean, when you're looking at about an average of about 30,000 pounds, you times that times four, and that's going to give you about 120,000 people that are going to go to bed either deciding that they did have a great meal because of sportsmen in the state, or they're going to go to bed hungry.
You know, and that's something, you know, focusing on our people here first is one of the things and one of the reasons why we bring Michigan Sportsman Against Hunger here on the show is because we are focusing on our own here first.
Yes.
Very important. Speaking with Dean Hall with Sportsman Against Hunger, have there been any exceptions made with processing because of what we're losing from one particular processor?
Well, not really. I mean, we're looking for processors. Basically, deer that go to the processors that are affiliated with the Michigan Sportsman Against Hunger program, they have to be inspected and they have to be licensed by the Michigan Department of Ag. And currently, within the on the outside of the core area, around the perimeter of it, of 10 total processors, there are four that are accepting donations, and they are part of the affiliated program with the Michigan Sportsman Against Hunger program. We are focusing efforts on getting a processor that is in the core area to get them licensed and inspected, so that and they're more than glad to be able to assist to feed the hungry. As a matter of fact, currently they have a very small processing facility, and although you do not have to be licensed and inspected in the state of Michigan to process deer to be part of an affiliate program of Sportsman Against Hunger, you do. But they do accept deer donations from their clients that want to help feed the hungry in their area. And we're hoping to get them on board with Sportsman Against Hunger.
And it's really nice, too, because you're helping people in Flint, Detroit, Lansing, Battle Creek, Comstock Park. I'm looking at your website here at sportsmanagainsthunger.org, Ann Arbor. Dean Hall, thank you so much for giving us that information. We'll have you on again as we get closer to November 15th here on Wild Michigan. Thanks so much for your time and your help, sir.
Okay, very welcome.
All right. More coming your way. Appreciate you joining us. Check out the podcast brought to you by carnivoreclub.co. Use the promo code Wild Michigan at checkout. Get 15% off of Carnivore Club with Wild Michigan.
You can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host all over the Great Lakes State. Winding up this show, winding up these 2 hours of outdoors radio programming, thanking our great guest we've had here on the show today, Rick Briggs from Camp Liberty. Camp-liberty.org is the website. If you would like to help some veterans, and it was really interesting, traumatic brain injury veterans and veterans with the obvious afflictions of war, needing help, and many of those not wanting to reach out, keeping it all closed in. The outdoors has a great healing power that we may never explain. But, you know, as you heard from Tom in the first hour of the show, I'm sorry, from Rick in the first hour of the show, that it can be done, and the outdoors plays a big part of it. And, of course, Camp Liberty is located in Brooklyn, Michigan. That's one thing I apologize I failed to mention in the opening segments of today's show. A little under the weather this week, scattered like you would not believe. But if you'd like to help with Camp Liberty in some way, maybe your company or something would like to make a donation to help these wounded heroes of our military service, both men and women, get some much-needed help getting outdoors and enjoying what we all already love and sometimes take for granted. You can find them at camp-liberty.org, camp-liberty.org. And again, there'll be a link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, that'll help you get in contact with them. Also want to thank Tom Stinson, custom lure maker, for joining us on the show. He is out of Rockford, Michigan, making some amazing lures, and we'll have a link on our website as well to Tom. He has a Facebook page. You'll have to look him up. Tom Stinson, S-T-I-N-S-O-N, Custom Lures is his page. You have to send him a friend request on that, and then you know, you can find and see some of his amazing work, and a link to that, again, on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Tim Ray from Carnivore Club joined us. Right now, you can get 15% off your total order with the Wild Michigan promo code at checkout. Just plug in Wild Michigan, save 15% on your total order. And basically, they are a meat of the month club. Some really cool stuff that we've had to sample here. Of course, we had the South African forms of biltong meat, different types. Some of the spicy snacks, also some meat sticks and some other things. But small batch craft-made meats, and they are the sponsor of the Wild Michigan podcasts. And you can find them at carnivoreclub.co, a link on our website, at wildmichiganradio.com. 15% off of your order when you use the promo code WILDMICHIGAN. So that's some good stuff to have. And, you know, coming up on Christmas time, I know it's October and I'm starting to become like the big retailers, but why wait to the last minute to find something for the really hard to buy for a person in your life when you can give them the gift of snack meats, jerkies, and sausages? A lot of cool stuff coming the way. And we'll be doing some podcast only reviews of the October box here coming up pretty soon. We'll get a little roundtable discussion going, and we'll put those up on the podcast at wildmichiganradio.com. A couple of things coming out of Lansing. The Senate earlier this week has unanimously passed House Bill 4239 to allow hunting from personal assistive mobility devices and remove the 150-yard hunting safety zone for bow hunting and trapping. Now, the bill introduced by Representative Charles Smiley was one that was something we really looked hard at pushing at CAMO at the Capitol earlier this year. It's a priority, and the safety zone change was a 2015 MUCC policy resolution. So what that essentially is saying, we are one step closer to allowing people with disabilities with the assistive mobility devices to be able to hunt from them. Okay, they'll be able to take their gun or their crossbow or their bow, whatever they're using, on this mobility device. It won't have to be cased. It won't have to be unloaded. They can take it out in the woods and use it. Passed the Senate, still waiting for final approval. So again, and that'll also remove the 150-yard safety zone for bow hunting. You know, the distance you have to hunt with a bow or to trap from a residence. Now, all the local ordinance will still apply. You'll still have to follow the rules of whatever area you're in. But again, you know, if you've got a backyard that's conducive to hunting and this gets passed, you'll be able to bow hunt or trap from your residence, but firearms will still be seen in the same light that they are right now. So again, that's pretty important stuff coming from Lansing at the Capitol. Also, a Southern Michigan man from Ottawa County has been accused of poaching a mother bear, a sow with cubs present in West Michigan. Now, if convicted, he faces up to $1,000 in fines, which goes to local libraries, and $1,500 in restitution, which will go into the Game and Fish Fund. And his hunting licenses will be revoked for this year and 3 years after. This coming from the Michigan DNR, a press release. The fines would be much more severe under proposed Senate bills 244 through 246, which has passed in the Senate unanimously already and was approved by the House Committee on Natural Resources and awaits action on the House floor. Now, some of these fines that will be levied in poaching cases will reflect points on deer, things of that nature. The new system is really something I think we need for poachers, because we're seeing kind of a rise in this, and it's getting kind of disturbing. Now, bear hunting has only been legal in Oceana County since 2007, as the Michigan bear population has expanded in its range further south, and the non-bear hunters that they've come to, you know, are surprised to learn that shooting a sow with cubs has been a poaching violation for the last 20 years when it was enacted by the NRC in 1995. I've known about this myself for quite some time. You know, even in Canada when we've hunted up there, even though the rules are somewhat different, shooting a cow, or a sow rather, with cubs is illegal and pretty frowned upon just in general. So again, this person is going to be in a bit of trouble. Now, the sow was also radio collared, and they had been tracking her, and her young were of good size. Now, fortunately, it seems that the young bears will survive and will go on. But as a result of this incident, the mother bear is gone, and the person who is not being named is going to be facing some charges here, and it's going to look pretty grim. And again, if these new rules go in with the new House bills, the new proposals, those fines could go up dramatically, and rightfully so, in my own personal opinion. Other things coming up here in Michigan. Keep in mind, if you are hunting in the core CWD area, the 9 townships affected, or at least what they're calling the CWD hot zone, you do have to have your deer checked at a check station in Lansing, in Bath, or in Williamston. There are 3 check stations put up to have your deer checked. Now, I was over there in the Lansing location the other day, and they're, you know, getting the word out, letting people know that they're not going to take your antlers, okay? If you're doing a European mount, they need to get the lymph node tissues and the brain tissues for testing. If you are doing a regular mount, a shoulder mount for your deer, they're not taking the antlers, okay? They're not taking the antlers. You can cape out your deer, bring in the head. They will get the tissues they need and then give you the test results back so you can process your deer. Also, speaking of processing, we spoke with Dean Hall from the Michigan Sportsman Against Hunger earlier today on the show, and there are some processors that will not be doing deer processing because of CWD. They want to protect their meat, their customers, and everything else, so they are not going to be processing deer. Make sure you get on the DNR website, michigan.gov/CWD, to find out where the list of processors is that you can go to, and how you can report your deer, because it is mandatory in the 9 township zone. So, that being said, thanks each and every one of you for joining us here on Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Thanks to HHA Sports. Thanks to Lucky Buck Deer Mineral, Costa Sunglasses, the MUCC, also Darton Archery, and Carnivore Club providing the podcast. Go to wildmichiganradio.com to get your 15% off Carnivore Club order with the promo code WILDMICHIGAN. Have a great one, everybody. We'll see you all next week on the Michigan Talk Network.